Hey everybody, this is Brian Dunaway, and you're listening to Comics Coast to Coast. This is episode number 49. And I have in the Skype studio today, I have Justin Thompson from Myth Tickle.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, Justin. How are you?
Pretty tired, pretty stressed out. A lot of nonsense going on. I don't know, I've been getting completely stressed over the last few months. A lot of anxiety, getting bad muscles problems and bone problems in my neck. I've had to go to a chiropractor.
Really?
And I'm not really sure what's happening. I don't know what's going on with me.
I could say you're getting old, but that wouldn't be nice.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, I think, am I grinding my teeth down to nothing? It's
really?
Like my stress level, yeah, it's just gone through the roof, but I can't really say that anything's particularly going on that any out of the ordinary. I don't know. I'm
stress
becoming
at work,
a
possibly?
Freakazoid or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some stress at work, but it's certainly nothing that I,
deadline
would be
pressures.
That freaked out about. I don't know what's going on with me. Maybe I'll figure it out at some point.
Is it your diet? Do you need more meat in your diet?
No, thank you. I'm doing fine without that.
Speaking of diets, let's see. We know this is Stefan Pass's favorite part of the show, whenever he does listen, which I know he does every week, right? He doesn't want to talk about our diets, and I'm going to talk about mine just for a second. I cut out gluten this week. And that, sir, is not easy.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know
it's
what gluten
my
is?
My daughter was allergic.
Yeah, it's wheat.
My daughter was allergic to it for a while, and we had to get all non-gluten stuff at Trader Joe's and stuff. Boy, and it's expensive, that stuff, too. But I think she's coming out of it.
That's great. Now, I'm taking it because I have psoriasis. No secret there. And makes my muscles hurt and my joints hurt. And there's some studies that show cut out gluten might help it. So guess what I'm doing? I'm cutting out the gluten. So I'm eating just meats and vegetables, whole foods.
You know the weirdest thing about psoriasis, and you probably know this.
Yeah.
The weirdest thing about it is that it's spelled with a P.
Yeah, yeah. Like pneumonia. And psoriasis, like pneumonia. That's spelled with a P. It pneumonia spelled with a P.
Why don't we get on with this?
I'll tell you what. let's get our guest on tonight, and he can tell us how you spell pneumonia. Tonight we have Jonathan Lemon with us tonight. Jonathan, are you there?
Hello. Yes, that's Lemon with a P.
Lemon with a P. Very good. Very good. And we just like calling him Lemon, so we're just going to stick with that, if that's okay with you.
That's perfectly fine.
All right. Yeah, I like that last name. Is that a real last name, or is that something that you chose when you came to America? Or
no, that's my official legal last name, yes.
Nice. Now, what kind of name is that? Where's that from? You got a little bit of accent. Tell us that about that a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Oh,
well,
boy.
The short story is I was born in England, in Europe.
Yeah.
I've been a U.S. citizen for many years, so I still have the accent. It comes in very useful from time to time.
Very good.
But that's the origins of me. I don't know if that's the origins of the name exactly.
Very good. Very good. Justin, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you introduce Jonathan Lemon. Tell us what he does.
Well, all right. Jonathan Lemon I feel silly. I mean, he's right here. We could just ask him. You do a lot of, you have a comic strip on Sherpa called Rabbits Against Magic. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes,
great title.
And you do political cartoons.
Yes.
Now not anymore.
Well, not so much. I mean, the strip has sort of taken over the last few months. But my background is probably more in the political vein.
It's very interesting, I think, because we've had a couple of political cartoonists on the show, but never one from another country, and that I think is really interesting because you. You'd have a very objective point of view on either side of the aisle, really. Do you find that a big plus in your approach of political satire, or is it, kind of more difficult? I can't even imagine.
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, I've been here 16 years, so I feel like most of my life, certainly most of my adult life, it's been in the States, and I feel like I'm much more... imbued in the political system here than I ever was in the British system.
Wow,
and,
great.
And so, I mean, I don't really know how to answer that question. It's certainly, I think the you know, as far as British political cartooning goes, I mean, there's definitely a much more sort of traditional streak of being meaner and sort of more cruder. The real, you know, the guy I really admire in Britain who still does political cartoons, Steve Bell. I mean, he there's no, you know, no holds barred when he comes to Bush and Tony Blair and stuff like that. The
so you think the New Yorker's cover not too long ago, that was pretty tame, huh? With Obama on the front of it.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't know if that was deliberately antagonistic or what. It didn't seem to me as satirical as I think they intended it.
But, I don't think so either. It came off as very ooh.
But it's an interesting question, because I think when I first arrived in the country, I couldn't draw political cartoons because I was too much outside. I was, you know, I was like learning still, and I didn't feel like I was enough part of the system that I could literally sit down and start making fun of it. But, you know, after 16 years, I'm, you know, everything's fair game right now.
Yeah, no, you've been burnt enough, right? So you know where it's at. Now, have you ever drawn the Queen in any of your cartoons?
Well, actually, when I was an art student, I was doing this rather odd little course. It was basically a visual and performing arts course in England. And my degree show, I kind of gave up. I didn't take the whole thing very seriously at all. And I invented myself as an artist, a different artist called Basil Blitz, and started doing sort of spoof, like basically like stunt artwork.
Yeah.
And I did a picture of the Queen made out of photocopies of little corgis, which is the dog she has, and sent it to Her Majesty, as she is known, I believe, by her subjects. She obviously replied, because I guess in Britain, when you write a letter, the polite thing to do, and in Britain everyone's very polite, is to send a letter back.
Nice.
And I was basically offering the piece for sale, and she wrote a long letter back saying how she, you know, couldn't accept it, as, you know, didn't wish to purchase it. Huh. And that became the art piece itself.
Yeah, that is awesome. So got a letter back from the Queen.
So any contact with the Queen.
Yeah, yeah. So if as an American, do you think I can write to her and she'll reply to me?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I actually did several pieces like that. I think Margaret Thatcher, who was the Prime Minister at the time, not a big favorite of mine, she also wrote back with a signed photograph, which I didn't really request.
Oh, thank you, didn't really want that. Thanks anyway.
A couple of other people I can't quite recall, but
that's awesome. I have never thought about writing to the Queen. I guess because since we had that little tiff back in 1700s, so I guess I don't really feel close to the, you know, the royal body there. But
you should write her.
She's a big fan of the comic strip medium.
It's really, that is some interesting tidbit of information. I did not know that. Wow. I'll tell you though, I really love your style. I don't care where you're at. I mean, if you're from Australia, we have people listen to Australia, people listen to Canada, all over the world. I love your style. I really do. It's awesome.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Justin, are you still
here? I'm blushing.
Oh, don't blush.
Yeah, I don't. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay, because I had to plug and unplug because I wasn't sure if you could hear me or not. Sorry about that. I cut out sometimes. If you listen to the show, Lemon, you know, for some reason, my computer likes to play tricks on me, and it just cuts me out sometimes, and I don't really know why.
It's really me. I'm putting them on pause. But anyway.
I thought that you were behind it. No, but I guess that was what I was after in that question was kind of, you know, when you first came here, you know, you probably didn't really know, you know, like, did you political cartoons before you came here? Didn't you? Or were you doing cartooning work around? Or did you decide to become a cartoonist once you already moved here?
No, I was doing a lot of cartoons. I don't know if it was as political. And I've traveled a lot. I actually lived in a few different countries since settling here and before I settled here. And you always get this wonderfully fresh, like, outsider perspective anytime you go to a new country, you know, whether it's in Central America or Africa or whatever, where you feel like you can see, you know, this broad view that no one else can see it. Basically, it's, you know, I'm too close to the trees to see the wood kind of effect.
Yeah.
But but after, you know, a few months, you realize you haven't really, you know, detected the nuances and subtleties of the culture, and that's when you really start, you know, wondering or basically thanking yourself that you didn't really jump right in there and start from the, you know, the get-go.
Yeah.
Drawing in the political cartoons, because you would have been like way off. You really do have to sort of, you know, live somewhere for a while to really understand exactly what's going on.
Absolutely. I've been doing the same thing. I've been trying to be a consumer of some of these cartoons that are, you know, all over the world. And sometimes their humor is a little bit different than ours. And sometimes it's hard for me to understand them because I'm using Babelfish to translate some of these things. So, you know, that totally gets lost in translation if it's not English based. But there's a lot of great cartoonists in Brazil, I think. And you were actually in Central America for a while, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, my wife is from Nicaraguan stock.
Yeah.
So there's that family thing there, but I actually
is that where you found her at?
No.
And then drug her to America?
No, she was already similar. She's actually born in San Francisco.
Oh, really?
One of the few few natives that's actually still living here. The 2 years in we were in Honduras doing a Peace Corps service, which was kind of a crazy experience. Nice. Which actually I would recommend, but it was very bizarre.
Yeah, we don't do Peace Corps over here in South Carolina. That's one of the noms kid. We actually do. There's a few people in the Peace Corps.
Actually, you'd be surprised. I think a lot of the Peace Corps volunteers are actually from the Carolinas and Virginias.
They are. I'm just giving you a hard time. Because I knew you wrote in your email that you were kind of on the lefty side of the politics in a, you know how that goes.
That's just the label.
We don't talk about politics in the show, so let's move on. You also were in, I also see you've been in Cuba before. Now, how long did you stay in Cuba?
I've been to Cuba 3 times, and I lived there for about 4 months. I did a semester at the University of Havana.
Nice.
Where I studied Cuban cultural studies and Spanish language. And I mean, it's a fascinating place. I mean, we're not going to discuss politics, so I won't say anything.
It's, we could talk about
a country with many problems, and it's a country with many absolutely fantastic and amazing things as well.
Yeah,
I think it's too bad that, you know, people can't just go there and see for themselves.
That's awesome.
Hear it all secondhand.
Now, have you thought about doing anything in that market?
Well, there's not that many Cuban newspapers.
Really, I didn't know that. So will they use all the paper for the cigars and stuff and nothing left for the newspapers? Or
it's not just for cigars. Actually, it's for much worse than that most of the time.
Like what?
Like,
you really want me to say it? There's a shortage of bathroom tissue.
Oh, nice.
TP, I believe it's called.
TP, yeah, that's what we call it, TP. Toilet paper, that's right. So there's a shortage of that there. So we'll have to talk to Carlos Castellanos about that.
it's a recycling program of sorts.
It's a recycling program. I don't think I want my TP recycled. Interesting stuff.
Well, tell us about you. I read your bio. You have so much to talk about. You've done so many things. Your music career. Were you a stand-up comic at one point? You say?
I was. Yes.
What is that like?
It was a darker period of my past. I was working. Well, when I graduated, of course, what do you do with a degree in visual and performing arts?
So oh, yeah.
I was in a band that was actually more of a cabaret burlesque act than it was a music outfit. And I was also working several jobs, and I was working in a couple of comedy clubs. And I thought, you know, this is easy. I could do this.
I know it.
And, I did a few gigs and got paid, and then I did one night. I think it was on my birthday, and I bombed, and it was the first time I bombed, and I was so depressed, and I decided that it just wasn't for me. It was really humiliating.
Nice. Now, Justin, I want to ask you this question. Have you ever wanted to do stand up? Have you ever done stand up? I know you've done acting. Have you ever wanted to do improv?
You know, a lot of people have actually asked me that. No, because I could never write material.
Okay.
And I never had any money to buy material. But I always knew I could do it if I had material that was strong enough. because I've done shows where I've had to do that type of thing in the show.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the mechanics of it, I know I could handle, but I don't know what I'd hell I'd say. I don't know what I'd talk about. That's the difficult thing. So I think I probably overthinking it killed any idea that I might have ever been able to pull that off.
Yeah. I've always wanted to do it. I've always wanted to just one time get up there in front of everybody and just do it. And
oh yeah,
why not? You know, that's just one of those things. And I have a terrible fear of public speaking. Radio podcasting doesn't bother me. I can't see anybody. And as long as I can pretend like nobody's listening, hey, why not? It's just us talking on the, you know, just like just talking on a little conference call or something. But yeah, getting in front of people, terrified. But yeah, I've always wanted to do that. That's one of the things that's on my list of things to do. Get up in front of everybody and make an absolute ass of myself.
Do you ever think you'd go back to that, Lemon?
Oh, no. In fact,
it's all over.
You know, when it's great, when it works and everyone's with you, it's a great feeling, especially because being on stage in general is a wonderful thing. It inflates the ego and you just get this instant feedback, which, you know, as a cartoonist, you just don't get. But when it doesn't work, it's a terrible thing. It really, it's the loneliest thing. And I've actually been trying to use some of that old stand-up stuff in comic strips, and I don't think it's working as well as I thought it would. It just doesn't. There's something about the visual and writing combination that doesn't really work. There's actually a book, I think, called Inside Woody Allen. It's a comic strip that was done in the 70s.
Hmm.
And it was basically Woody Allen's stand-up material, and it was drawn as a comic strip, right?
Huh.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
I've never seen that. That's interesting.
But
it never really worked the same as watching the movies or listening to the Woody Allen stand-up. It just didn't translate quite the same.
That's interesting. No, I've never seen that.
Did you ever see Annie Hall?
Yeah.
Brian?
Me?
Brian,
Annie Hall? No, I know what you're talking about, but I've never seen it.
Well, there's a little segment in that film where he's animated. He and his buddy are talking, and he talks about how when he was a kid, he was always always attracted, never to Snow White, always attracted to the Wicked Godmother.
Yeah.
And they did this whole thing as an animated cartoon. Huh. And basically, it was that style put into a Sunday strip.
Hmm.
And I think I only saw a few of them. But, because I was always a big fan of that movie. I just thought...
I bet you can find that on YouTube.
I never forgot it.
I bet I can find that on YouTube somewhere, that video.
Sure you could.
That's what I'm doing searching now. Interesting. I'll have to check that out. I also have a book that it's just fallen apart. It's called Comedy Writing Secrets by Melvin, I can't remember his stupid name. It's a yellow book. And he teaches how to comedy on different levels, you know, writing versus, you know, speech writing versus, you know, stand up comics, anything. And he's just a real smart guy. I mean, it's hard to imagine anyone being taught how to be funny, because I've always felt like I've had a natural humor to me, but I really think that helped me a lot in my writing and putting that comedy in word. So,
well,
check it out.
When you approach writing your strip, which again is Rabbits Against Magic.
Yeah.
Is it about the same for you, Lemon, as when you used to write stand up? I mean, do you have the same approach? I mean, obviously you're under more of a constriction of, you know, rhythms like three panels, but is it basically just your ideas, or do you have to approach it in a new way?
No, it's completely different. In fact, listening to me now, you're probably thinking, you know, this guy isn't as funny as he should be, right? Seeing as he was a stand-up comedian. I actually had a character that I did when I was a comedian.
Yeah.
And the jokes were mostly, there were puns and gags. And I don't know how funny they were outside the context of the character.
Yeah.
But the strip writing is much more, I don't want to make it sound like it's more important than it is, but I tend to avoid gags and parodies, and it's much more sort of observational, I guess what I call meta humor. It's more of a situation-based sort of comedy as opposed to, you know, your third panel, oh yeah, there's the joke sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So in, yeah, I think that's completely different.
Yeah, that's kind of, I think that's kind of where strips are going to gravitate more towards. I mean, the gag thing, people don't really want it anymore. It's so played, it seems like. You know?
That's interesting. So you think that's out? What about Stefan Passis with his puns?
I think a lot of people enjoy puns. I do. Yeah. I'm a big pun fan. I always have been. And I've never quite understood that people get angry when you say puns. I don't get that.
Yeah.
A lot of people do, you know that?
I like puns. Play on words. I like that.
Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah. But anyway, teach his own, I suppose.
Yeah. But that's right.
Just to interject, I mean, with the Passis stuff, I mean, he's almost making fun of the pun. He's taking it this extra sort of step forward. Yeah. It's he's almost going too far, and it's so labored that it's sort of funny that he's gone over the top.
Yeah.
Whereas Beetle Bailey or something, not that, you know, that's a bad strip or anything.
Yeah.
And Garfield, it's really the classic gag that's the same. You know, it's funny now as it was, you know, 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
We've just seen it 100 times.
Yeah, basically, it's like with Stefan, it's like if you're going to go for it, you just really go for it. Yeah. You put like 7-8 puns in one frame. I think there was one thing that he did with sea anemones once that was just rattled off a litany of maybe 7 anemone puns, one after another. It was so great. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to tip the table.
He didn't have any seamen jokes? Like in the Navy?
No, because these are the... Because he's syndicated in papers. But I wouldn't put it past him trying to do it.
Too good. Lemon, what were your artistic influences as far as cartoons go? Comic strips?
Well, the usual Harriman, Kelly, Schultz, Watterson, Dr. Seuss. I think growing up in England, there was a lot of comics that you probably wouldn't have heard of called like Beano, Dandy, Sparky. They were pretty bad. Then in the 80s, there was a comic that came out that basically took that whole tradition and made it crude and really lowbrow. And the magazine was called Viz. And it was so popular. Everyone was reading it. It was the number one reference point. And it basically elevated like comics to a whole new level. And I there was a rival publication called Poot. That I used to draw a strip for, and not my strip, but they had a strip in there called Trunky the Toilet, and there was all these, I mean, nice. There was nothing too low to go in these things.
Now, is it lower than, like, Mad Magazine?
Oh, much lower.
Really? Yeah, wow.
I consider Mad Magazine high art. There's nothing, the Mad magazines that you could buy in Britain weren't the magazines. They were the paperbacks with the yellow spines.
Yeah.
And
they tended to be the earlier strips from the 50s, you know, the sort of lampoons, I guess they call them.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love those. I mean, I'd buy them when I was 8. I didn't have any idea what they were about or what they meant, but I used to love like copying the art and just looking at them, and they were fantastic. But yeah, that, I mean, and then I guess the humor stuff would be more like, you know, Monty Python and like sort of anarchic, surreal humor. I really like the Banana Split show. They used to show that.
Oh, yeah.
Not God, the cartoons, I grew up on that.
The stuff in between the cartoons. I used to love that.
Yeah, that live action stuff, those guys in those suits. That was the greatest.
Yeah, that was totally trippy. Did you ever see the Great Space Coaster? Or was it the Great Space Coaster? Or was that too far after your time?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, never heard of it. All right. Let's move on.
Well, I got an email from you. We were talking a little bit back and forth, and you said that you just finished the Schultz biography. What did you think about that?
I read the biography, and actually, I didn't realize Passis is in the end of that.
Huh.
He's the climax of that book.
Get out. I haven't finished this yet. I haven't read it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I spoiled the
Oh, you ruined it.
No, I'm surely not going to read it.
Yeah.
But I also read, there was, I think, in the Comics Journal, the May edition, they had basically like a rebuttal edition to that biography. And they had like four guys in that Comics Journal manner, where they ramble on for several thousand pages, including Monty talking about that biography and stuff. And I mean, there's no question that Sparky was just the biggest influence on comic strips in the history of comic strips. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. But it really did make me realize, just reading the biography, not just the good influences, but the bad influences. And I have to say that, you know, the fact that his style could be reduced so easily because it was so minimalist and easy to sort of shrink down, that mm-hmm. really made a lot of people draw, and then the whole page basically shrunk down because it just could be shrunk down. I can't imagine, you know, if
Sparky can do it. Yeah.
Yep. And then reading a lot of the strips as well. I mean, I've been reading from the library a lot of the collections that have been reissued, the Fantagraphics ones.
Yeah.
And a lot of the strips that just end with the, you know, the good grief or the sigh at the end.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, to me now, that it's just such an easy cop out. But at the same time, it the whole idea of the strip not being about the last panel and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think it's sort of, I don't know. It's had such an effect that
I think that touches people, though, you know, because nobody had really done that before. You know, it was stated in that book that a lot of people passed him up because of that thing you just mentioned, that kind of sigh at the end. You know, they're like, comics have to end in a punchline. Why don't you have a punchline?
Yeah.
A lot of editors didn't get it because it was so far ahead of its time. But I don't know if that time ever really would have come if he hadn't done it.
Yes.
I mean, there was just something very simple about that. And that sigh or that good grief, that little moment of angst, obviously touched enough people to create the phenomena that it became. So I don't know. Somehow he tapped into some emotional center and people in doing that, but it was quite a risk when you think about it.
It's true.
Oh, I agree. I think he created a sort of esoteric poignancy that you hadn't seen in the comics before, and I think I missed that coming in from the comics that we see today. There's very little of that sort of I call it meta humor. That sort of, like, it's not, there's no physical exact reason why a strip's funny. It's just funny to read.
Yeah, or just fun to read.
Or it's poignant, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think a really good example of your meta humor is in your Rabbits Against Magic strip. Let me see what date that is. August 6th, where your two main characters, those two rabbits, are sitting there, and the one with the Lucha Libre mask on, forget his name, he's reading the paper, and he's talking to the one with one eye, and, you know, they have a pretty good conversation about comic strips there. That's the one where he says, hey, check it out. The local paper's having a comics poll. And they talk about kind of the state of comics nowadays. Yeah. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a good strip.
Well, thank you.
That's a good strip. You did good.
Do you feel that's successful? Or is that like the core of what you were talking about with meta comics?
I guess so. First of all, you know, I just want to point out that I do this thing on Sherpa, and it's a daily strip, and I have no editorial pressure to change anything. So some of the strips, I guess, I mean, I look back, I mean, I'm like a month ahead with these. So nice. Even the ones that are coming up like today and this week, I look back and think, oh, gracious me, how did that happen? You know, why did I let that one slip through? So I, you know, I like to think that means I'm getting better, but I don't know if that's the case. I mean, that was directly in response to the local paper here, the San Francisco Chronicle, and they're just messing with, you know, a lot of people by having this stupid comics poll, and they had they ran, I think, 10, like, you know, for, you know, much better than I think what they currently show. And then they basically just forgotten the whole thing. I don't know if there are changes planned, but
I think the whole thing is proven pretty pointless.
Yeah, I mean, I read the Chronicle too, and I was a little disappointed to not see any changes.
Yeah, be an editor, stand up, grow some balls, do something original.
Well, they have a hell of a comics page, I gotta say.
Oh, they do.
They've got some. I've looked through that thing, and I mean, there's not a whole lot I'd throw out from the Chronicle. I think they're doing pretty well, but yeah, there are other strips out there that they don't have that I would like to see.
Interesting.
Like Mission Deep.
Yeah, something funny. Something good. Something updated once a year.
What's out there that you wish was in the paper more, Lemon?
Well, I'm biased, so I know several cartoonists, and I'd love to see them get their big chance.
Pimp them, go
there's
ahead.
There's this great strip called Mick Tickle that that should be at least in a Sunday issue.
Yeah. Please, I could barely keep a day ahead. If I had to do something 7 days a week, oh my God.
That's too funny.
How do you stay a month ahead?
He has a time machine.
I don't have kids. I have a very understanding wife. Yeah. I also have very long lunch hours.
Nice.
Which helps a lot. And
go ahead.
I was going to say I'm like backlogged with ideas, and then it's like penciling and then inking and then coloring. Yeah. And the coloring thing is the thing that really holds it up. I think I could do even more if I did black and white, but I kind of like the finished effect with the color.
Yeah. I agree. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I would like to talk more about that lunchtime doodling that I'm trying to get into also, and maybe talk a little bit about our work environments. All right, be right back.
Waiting for you, waiting for something like you, wasting my time. What I like to do is waste time on you. I cry out for someone, I cry out for you. And I know there will be someone new, someone unique to complete me. And I know I will find what I left so far behind so long.
Hope you enjoyed that break as much as I did. I know Justin did because he was eating something crunchy.
I had a fortune cookie. I have a fortune cookie.
You have a fortune cookie. Did you take the fortune out first?
No, I didn't. I usually wait till I'm done with the cookie, but I could make an exception. That's if you right. really want to hear what it says.
That's how I do it. I eat it with the cookie in it, then I like feed it out like one of those old ticker tape machines like they used to have for the stock market.
Do you remember that scene from the show The Tick? The live action show where he ate a fortune cookie and he said, "Wait a minute, I'm getting a message from my teeth." And he pulled it out. God, that was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
I don't remember that. Give us your fortune.
Says, a friend will soon reveal an exciting secret to you. So, Lemon, what do you have to tell me?
Nice. And we are back with Lemon. We're going to talk this second half, I believe. We're going to talk a little bit about our lunchtime artistic endeavors. I don't know about you guys, but I've been eating in more lately because gas prices have skyrocketed through the roof. So during that time, I go, wow, I ate in like 5 seconds. I've got this whole
gas.
And I've got like this whole hour left over. What am I going to do with it? Well, of course, I got to work on my comic strip. I got to get back in the game. And so I'm using that time to doodle a little bit, draw a little bit, but I can't get any finished product. How much can you guys do in a lunch hour? Justin, do you do anything during your lunch hour? Or are you so sick of all that drawing crap and cartoonist stuff that you're like, pfft?
I can't get anything done in like a half hour. I have to have, a larger block of time to do. Actually, I don't know. It kind of depends on where I am in the strip. If I'm at a coloring stage, I could throw on some color because that's kind of a no brainer. But the drawing process or something, I need a little bit longer. than a half hour to really work all that out.
Yeah.
Because I can't break that up.
Hmm. All right. Lemon, what you do?
Yes,
sir. You actually work at a location other than an office at home. Is that correct?
Or do you work at home? I have luckily, the person that owned the house before we did divided the ground floor into several miniature apartments, one of which I have co-opted as a workspace, which works out fine because I have my desk and I have a toilet, and then that's pretty much it.
That's all you need in a miniature.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
The lunchtime time, I mean, I like to eat quickly and get that out the way.
Yeah.
And there's a library nearby, which I go to, where they have these study rooms.
Yeah.
And you lock yourself in, and it's soundproof, so there's no distractions whatsoever. All artists, as far as I'm concerned, should have a sketchbook, which you carry around and you write down your ideas and use as message paper when you meet people and whatever. And you take that book and you basically open it up and you find the idea you think is the strongest.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, in an hour's lunch break, you should be able to sketch up on a bit of paper the foundations of a strip. I personally don't like to ink anywhere other than in my home studio.
Yeah.
But I can usually I do letter occasionally in the library, but generally speaking, I have a stack of boards of cartoons.
Yeah.
And they're basically, the backup is the inking stage and then the coloring stage. But I'm never short of this pile that I have next to me right now of unfinished strips that are ready to go.
Yeah. That's wild. So that room you're in is soundproof both ways, right? So even if you go nuts in there, no one hears it, right?
I've never tested that theory.
Never tested it.
But I'm assuming that is the case.
Nice.
You know, libraries, they like that silence.
Yeah, they
do.
They really
get a little
do.
Agitated if you make any sort of noise.
See, I live in the South in a smaller town, and we don't have anything like that. We got the bathroom. That's about as close as we come. But there's the constant interruption. You know, the people coming in and going. It's no good. And this is how I would perform on stage. Thank you. Good night.
What?
I was trying to make a joke about our pitiful bathrooms in our sound rooms and stuff, but and then totally bombed. I only have two people in here, and it was total silence. And I'm thinking, this is how it would be if I tried to ever do stand-up. So that's off the table.
Yes,
I'm taking it off my list now. Just marking it off.
Was that a non sequitur?
That's right.
Oh.
Thank you.
Gosh, I'm looking at your website at lemonworld.com, and you've had like six different strips. Is that right? That you've run over the years?
Well, the only one of any substance was one called Big Shot, which I did for a film magazine.
Yeah.
But the rest, when I was my parents died recently, unfortunately, and I was going through the attic space and found a box, and my mom had kept literally every single scrap of paper I had scribbled on from the age of like zero up until I left home, which was 16, and this is such an incredible find to have all this. I mean, it was just so much stuff, all my like school books and everything, and I was just knocked out by the fact that she'd saved all this, as well as, you know, for the purposes of documentation of my incredible life.
That's awesome.
I'm being ironic and sarcastic there. I've constantly started and strips, new strips, and drawn, you know, the obligatory 4 weeks worth of, and sent them in and got the rejection letters. So that's pretty much the average length of my pre-internet comic strips. The new one, the Rabbits one, Rabbits Against Magic, rabbitsagainstmagic.com. I should start plugging this thing, right? I'm
That's
the
right.
world's worst self-publicist. the uh, that's now gone, I think, 130 strips, and I'm loving it. I mean, I think it's such fun to do, and I hope that comes across.
It does.
Yes, you know, it's the funniest thing. This was about two or three shows ago. I had this strip all set to go as my comic pick of the week, and I had it up and everything, and I forget who we were talking to, but we never wound up getting to that. And I'm like, all right, we'll just get to it next time. And out of the blue, I get a message from Facebook from Lemon. And he's asked me, you know, are you the Justin Thompson from Comics Coast to Coast and Myth Tickle? And I said, yes. And then he introduced himself as the author of Rabbits Against Magic, the strip that I was going to promote. And I just thought that was the weirdest cosmic coincidence.
I do remember.
How cool is
that? That is awesome. How cool is Facebook, right?
Yes, it's amazing. But anyway, what I was going to ask you is, because you've had a few different strips here. I see something called Mr. Moosehead and Big Shot, of course. I was reading through that. Rabbits Against Magic, Smiles Per Gallon. You have a lot. Your ideas go in lots of great directions. How do you kind of just decide on subject matter for a strip? You just go through something in your life and go, I kind of into rabbits. Or, I mean, how does that come through in your head where it solidifies?
Well, the rabbits one has a specific there was a specific thought process to that one. The other strips, there's some actually not on there. There was one called Zoo, which I did, which was just more talking animals. And looking back at it, I mean, it was really lame. I just threw it. I'm almost ashamed to even mention it now. I certainly won't be putting it up on the internet anytime soon. The rabbits one, I just had this, I thought was a really great idea. And it started up ambitiously as a strip with two different drawing styles, and I was going to have a portal that these rabbits pass through, and when they were inside this magician's hat, they could talk, and they were like cartoons, and when they came through the portal into the real world, they couldn't talk, and they were just like regular rabbits, and it was sort of a Wizard of Oz, you know, Roger Rabbit type thing, and I thought that was like really cool, and then I started drawing it, and then straight away, all I wanted to do was draw the stuff that was the surreal, cartoony stuff. I didn't want to do the real stuff. So that's sort of how that developed. And I really did start off with way too many characters, and then I basically went back and then basically made them into just the four main characters after that, because there was an ensemble cast that was just ridiculously big. And it's still, you know, a work in progress as far as I'm concerned. I just really just started to see what happened. And I think the really great thing about Sherpa is that, you know, you do get feedback, and there is almost like this audience out there that, you know, you can see with the statistics how many people are reading, and you can see that they're getting more and more and more. And I you know, to me, that means that's a good thing. That's a good sign. So
It is. When Brian and I were on, we didn't have those statistics, and we did got very little feedback. How's your feedback been lately? I mean, are you getting good positive stuff?
I haven't had any bad feedback, fingers crossed. Maybe after the show I will get some more feedback. I don't know. I mean, it's mostly from people, other webcomic artists, which is fine. I wouldn't say there was a great deal in the way of constructive criticism, but I still, just the idea that it's a really great you know, it's you're out there on the internet, and it's very little work other than drawing the strip, obviously, but I just feel like it's, you know, this showcase, and I'm part of it, so I mean I can only say good things about it.
That's awesome.
I know there's other people that think otherwise.
I know, and you know, Brian and I never really fell into that. We've always been pretty big fans of Sherpa, and we've had good experiences on there. We've talked about it extensively on this show. We're big fans of Sherpa.
Absolutely.
So where do you, you said it's a work in progress. Where would you like it to go as far as the internal workings of the strip? Do you have something you're working towards thematically or anything?
My goal up until this point was just to be on this show. So this is my first hurdle, as it were.
Wow. Wait till you get our bill.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here next to a huge pile of you know, all 130 strips. And I mean, at some point, I'd love to see them in a book or some sort of sellable item, because I love books. And most of my access to comic strips really is through books, and certainly the older stuff. And just for legacy purposes. So, I mean, I don't know if that will ever happen. I you know, keep my fingers crossed. But, I just feel like, you know, I'm keeping on doing this, and it's hard work, but I feel like I'm getting a little bit better with every strip. And at some point, you know, these things happen as long as you're dedicated enough. And we'll just see what happens. I really don't have, you know, plans. You know, if it happens, obviously it happens. But I don't have plans for, you know, print publication or, you know, world domination or anything. So at the moment, I'm having really good fun drawing it. I really love my little characters. And they're right there with me every moment of the day. I'm always like wondering what they would do in whatever situation I'm in. So it's like having little, you know, imaginary friends around you.
That's awesome.
That's exactly the right idea, I think. Yeah.
That makes me get excited. It makes me all moist.
Yeah.
No,
that's kind of the way I've always looked at mine.
Yeah.
You know, I really like the characters, and I think about them. And when I think about them, something happens and I can like, oh, I'll write that down or I'll do that.
I always
like kind of peeking in.
I always imagine them doing parallel things to whatever I'm doing. Like if I'm taking a shower, I imagine they're taking a shower wherever they're at. Yeah. If I'm driving down the road, then they're probably, you know, getting ready to go to work or whatever.
That's a good idea, actually. That's a good, if somebody's like stuck for an idea, just say, well, what if they're doing what I'm doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine they're in a parallel universe, you know, doing basically the same thing. You know, they're trying to get ready, trying to go to work. Something funny's got to happen, right? Something funny happens in my life every day.
Well, it would if it were those characters. That's the point.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you just picture them, like, taking a shower together for whatever reason, and suddenly they realize, hey, we're in the shower together. I mean, that's funny right there, right?
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's going
to
be. Hold on, I'm writing this down.
And then something happens, and there's a power glitch, and the lights go off. Yeah. And they're sitting there, and they really feel awkward.
Yeah, yeah. I hate when that happens.
And you see a word say, clunk. The guy says, don't tell me that was a soap. You know, we could go on and on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Right. Anyway. Who flushed the toilet? You know, it's all that stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, the strip's great, Lemon, and I love it. I've been reading it since I first discovered it a few weeks ago. I really like it. I'm really glad that I could get you on the show, and I'm glad that you're a fan of the show, because I didn't have to beg you to come on.
Please.
Like I usually do when I write people.
No, I think I mentioned before, I mean, I discovered this show, I don't remember what episode it was, but I think I was on Daily Cartoonist or something, and they mentioned that like Pastis was being interviewed, and I figured, you know, I have nothing better to listen to right now. I'll see what it's all about.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've had bad experiences with some of the podcasts in the past, and that they just, you know, some reason they just kind of go in one ear and you just sort of get annoyed.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, you have great chemistry and you've always had really great guests.
Oh,
and
thank you.
I went back and I mean, I've literally listened to pretty much every episode.
That's awesome.
And I would never have heard of Sherpa if I hadn't been listening to whatever show it was where you were talking about Sherpa.
That's awesome. I love that. I love to hear
that. I owe you guys a lot. It's a huge honor to be on this show.
And so does Sherpa. They owe us a lot. I'm just kidding. Dear Sherpa, please send me a check.
I always like to talk to people who've come from other countries, because I always wonder what it's like to live in other countries. Because, like, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm so frustrated living here sometimes, and I always wonder what it's like. You know, I always wonder if the grass is greener somewhere else.
Yeah.
But, when you, so you left when you were how old when you left England?
For the US? I was 25 when I, 23, I think, when I first came to the US. And I moved here when I was 25.
What prompted you to move to the US? Was it something you did?
I definitely had a love affair with all things American when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Much to my parents' dismay. I mean, I first traveled out here on my own on like a ridiculously low budget, and I was just sponging off like friends of friends of friends and, nice. And traveled around. I think I got a really cheap Amtrak pass.
Oh, wow.
The Eurorail pass they have in Europe, there's like a reciprocal arrangement, I think, for Europeans to be disappointed to come over here and travel around on Amtrak. And I did that, and it was very budget wary of me, but I saw a lot of the country, and I just love San Francisco. And then I think I came back about a year or 2 years later, and I was not planning on moving here, but I didn't really have any reason to go back to England. I was just basically traveling, and I was just walking down the streets, and I bumped into somebody I knew from London, and I had no idea that they lived in the US.
That's wild.
And I was like, what? This is kind of weird. So we just went and had a beer, and then he just mentioned he worked for a computer company. This is before the internet. And they were making CD-ROMs, and they needed somebody to do like cartoon characters for these CD-ROMs. And I was like, I can do that. I figured, you know, maybe it would be some more traveling money. I could, you know, maybe afford a hotel or something.
Yeah.
And it ended up, I was basically doing that gig for about 10 years. And I did all my whole citizenship thing, and it was a lot easier before 9/11, really, to get all that stuff done, and being, you know, of English extraction with a accent, that probably didn't harm my chances either.
That's right.
But that's basically how I ended up here.
That's awesome. I want to go to England. I've never been out of the country.
England.
Yeah.
See, I've always been an Anglophile. I've always had a thing about England.
Yeah.
I always wanted to live there.
Me too.
You know, you wonder why you grow up like that, you know, having an affinity for some other country.
Yeah.
You know, before I ever went there, I had a thing about it. And now that I've been there a couple of times, oh, my God, I could totally live there.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just strange.
It is.
What part of England are you from?
Born in Watford, which is North London. That's the same town that George Michael and Wham come from.
I wouldn't be going around telling everybody that.
Oh, now that segues into another area of your life that I wanted to ask you about. You were
you're talking about the music.
Kid, right?
Oh, okay.
I think time's up. Isn't it an hour? Is that
pop star. You were, right? You were a musician in a band?
Yeah, I mean, in the early 80s, anyone with a haircut and an ironing board and a synthesizer could make a record and have some sort of semblance of success. And
I'm going to call the Clash and let them know the bad news, basically. Back in the early 80s.
Now, can I find that on YouTube? I'd love to see that.
I do have a recording which I just had digitized, but I did watch it and then decided it wasn't fit for YouTube.
Oh, come on. Let me play it at the beginning of the show. Come on.
Send it to me. You can download MP3s from the website. There's
oh, really?
No... the music itself is—I'm not that ashamed of. It's the fact that my bleach blonde hair and tie-dyed baggy pants and
I need a screenshot of that.
Yeah, I mean, you think it's hard enough to look at strips you drew in the '80s? It's even harder to watch yourself in videos from the '80s.
What was the name of your band? Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not the Flock of Seagulls. They were from Liverpool. The synth band that it was a synth duo was called Jesus Couldn't Drum, and we had three vinyl albums released, and we did several tours of Italy and Holland and Belgium and.
Man, you really have done it all.
I think it's great.
I surrender.
I love that. I love that anybody, you know, who could go all these different directions in their life and come back to, you know, one off the wall weird thing like cartooning. I love that because that's what I did. And I hear a lot of cartoonists have done things like that. I think it's really interesting.
I'm bored.
Because your mind expands and you do these off the wall things from different directions, you know, and you come back to cartooning, you can kind of reach back to those other weird avenues you've been in. Do you find that as a good resource, Lemon?
Well, I think there's nothing that beats experience for being, you know, worldly and funny and just generally,
I agree.
You know, well informed. And you know, I think that's probably a lot of the problems with the people that are doing things now. They're 18 and they want to do something amazing with their artwork, and they can because they're 18. They all they can really talk about is that small little thing. And I mean, when I was 18, I didn't know anything, and that's why I ended up in an 80s pop band.
Yeah, that's right.
But the
singing about love.
Exactly. And I mean, it might sound glamorous to you, but I have to say that it was a period of my life which I didn't like myself and I didn't particularly enjoy that much. It just seemed very hedonistic and almost, you know, it's a missed opportunity, because if I could do the same thing now, have the same opportunities now, I mean, I wouldn't screw it up the same way, and I probably wouldn't be nearly as successful as when I did it. I mean, I was literally earning a living when I was doing that. Yeah. But the you know, it's there's definitely no substitute for experience, and you know, but I'm an old man, so I can say that.
Well, I think it's great. I mean, that's total immersion in the time period. Yeah. You know, I mean, you can't look back at that in a negative way.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter what happened, you just go, wow, that was the time. That was that time, and we really went for it. And I think it's great. I congratulate you on that.
I do too. That's just incredible. I missed out on that whole thing. I was too much of a fat nerd.
You were a kid in the 80s, weren't you? In the early 80s?
Yeah, yeah. I was born in 72, so, you know, I was, you know, real young.
Mm.
I was old enough to be in a pop band. Damn. Hanson's did it.
Sorry, do you think that someday you'll collect your current strip and get a submission together? Or are you just kind of not worried about it right now? You're just kind of having fun?
Well, I did just submit, actually, about a week and a half ago.
Nice.
2 weeks ago, I'm not sure. And I haven't heard anything. But the, I mean, you know, I just submitted because that's what you do.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it takes another 200 strips to be able to submit and get, you know, some semblance of a response that, you know, is encouraging. But you know, I had the strips, I put the package together, and I was shocked there's only 5 syndicates now. What happened to them all?
Yeah. they're leaving just like the newspapers.
They seem to be merging. Is it?
Yeah,
I think a couple of them merged.
God, everything's merging anymore.
Yeah, everything's merging. It's just not as it's not as diverse anymore. Yeah, there's only so much you can do. Same with the music. Music's the same way. Clear Channel owns everything.
Ugh.
You know? Ugh. Exactly. Well, let's not get on that. Let's end the show with a happy note, because it is almost an hour. Whee! Mr. Lemon.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to plug or you'd want to talk about?
Well, rabbitsagainstmagic.com is the website.
Yeah. Check it out.
Yeah, you got to look and read the bio of Lemon. It's really funny.
Yeah.
Along with being incredibly varied, but you're a funny writer, dude. that's some good stuff.
Yeah. You do good.
I'd like to thank you very much for inviting me on the show. I mean, it's, as I said, it's a huge pleasure to be here and an honor.
Oh, thank you. It's been great having you on. I hope we have you on again sometime. If you ever decide to put them in a book or anything, let us know, okay?
Yeah, and let us know about the syndication, too. If you get any feedback or anything, let us know how that goes.
I will.
It'd be interesting.
I have a blog running as well that you can access from the website, which I occasionally update.
Yeah.
And I will put stuff on there.
That's great.
People be interested.
So keep an eye out for that. You also have a Facebook account?
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of that?
That's just me, Jonathan Lemon.
Jonathan Lemon. Okay, so go to Facebook, look up Jonathan Lemon if you want to. I guess you want some more friends, unless you got it locked down. No more friends. Got too many. And do you Twitter?
I do Twitter.
Nice.
Hey, I didn't know that.
I don't Twitter very often.
Yeah.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't Twitter kind of like the same thing as the on Facebook when you write, like, you know, what are you doing right now?
Yeah.
Isn't that basically the same thing, except it goes to cell phones and stuff?
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But, you know, Twitter's the thing. It's where it's at. So, you know, you got to go where the kids are playing. So that's what you do. And that's where I'm at now, Twitter. You can meet me, look at me on Twitter. Look me up. Mission Deep on Twitter. You can see Justin. What's yours, Myth Tickle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Check out Justin. Adam is a friend. He's lonely and he needs some friends. And do check out Lemon on Twitter. What's your Twitter account?
I don't recall.
Look it up Lemon. Lemon. There can't be that many lemons world out there.
Oh, I found it. If you want me to say it, I'll say it. If you don't, I won't say it.
Oh, don't say it. Yeah.
I have no idea what it is. You can say it.
Oh, okay. I typed in your name, Jonathan Lennon, J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N, Lemon, and Lemon World came up. And nice. There you are. And I'm going to follow you now.
And I'm going to follow you. I'm going to stalk you. That's right. All right. Thanks, everybody, for being on the show. And we will see you next week.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Lemon.
None to say, and they don't bring the noise. They don't bring it. They don't bring it. They don't bring the noise. Got money in your ears, la la la, I don't hear a damn thing. Cover your eyes when things go south, and ha ha ha, I don't see a damn thing. Eat the fruit, so says the snake, and if that's not enough, take what remains. Shit for brains, nobody dares to complain. Contradict and America hates you, better not talk about anything taboo.
San Francisco.
Darth Vader, you get out of here.